From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. Hello, my name's Ira Melman.
Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson. On our program today, ASEAN and APEC meetings are coming up. There are many big issues to be discussed.
Beijing is making a major attempt to clean up its air as they prepare for a major international meeting. Michael Lippin will be here with that story on China Focus.
Hey, it's Friday. That means Ray Kugel will be checking in with a look at the new movie by John Wick.
It's called John Wick, and Apple is battling malware that has attacked thousands of its devices in China and some other nations, interestingly, not the United States.
Asia's top Olympic official tells FIFA to stay away from the Winter Olympic schedule.
That'll be in our sports report. We will check business reports for you all coming up on VOA Global from the Voice of America.
This is Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asia news and events for Friday, November 7th. I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome. In brief today, North Korea's continued pursuit of nuclear weapons may not be on the official agenda of the upcoming Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum or the East Asia Summit, but VOA's Seoul correspondent Brian Padden tells us that it will almost certainly be addressed behind the scenes while attending world leaders' meet on the sidelines.
APEC's 21 members, including the United States, Russia, China, Japan, and South Korea, will meet next week in Beijing. Following that, the East Asia Summit, hosted by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, known as ASEAN, will be held in Myanmar. North Korea is not a member of either organization, but Kim Han Kwon, the director of regional studies at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul, says the North's nuclear weapons program will surely be addressed at these summits. He says the issue of North Korea is not just a topic for the Korean Peninsula and East Asia, but it is a topic that can bring a big change in the security system of Asia Pacific. So related countries will have discussions either officially or unofficially at the meetings. The discussions could have added urgency with media reports out of South Korea this week, alleging that the North has started a new uranium enrichment plant at its main nuclear facility. The North is believed to have made advances in trying to build an atomic bomb, but is still believed to be working to miniaturize a nuclear warhead to mount on a delivery system. President Obama is also scheduled to meet with South Korean President Park Geun-hye in Myanmar. They will likely discuss the recent mixed signals coming from North Korea. Pyongyang has at times indicated an openness towards restarting talks, but still carries hostile rhetoric towards both Seoul and Washington. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
Next week, Myanmar is the host of the East Asian Summit, a highly anticipated achievement for its ongoing democratic transition. But world leaders are converging on the capital as human rights groups are trying to focus attention on ongoing forced detentions, restricted movements, and intimidation of more than 120,000 displaced ethnic Rohingya. Steve Sanford joins us from Myanmar's troubled Rakhine State.
This road connects Sitwe to nine camps housing displaced Rohingya. Security is tight and travel restricted. This heavy security came to Rakhine following outbreaks of violence between the Muslim Rohingya and mostly Buddhist locals in 2012. To keep the peace, authorities have virtually locked Rohingya into remote encampments. UN rights monitors have deplored the conditions and the lack of basic rights for people whom the government does not recognize as citizens. On one particular day, soldiers raided a camp looking for weapons and illegal drugs. They did not find any, says resident Sahir Hakim, who manages the camp's medicine shop.
They said they were looking for illegal items in my house, and they accused me of hiding illegal material. The owners of the huts said that if they were going to accuse us, then they should find the proof. They said that they had searched already, but could not find anything. So they asked us, "Are you scared?" We replied, "Of course, you are terrorizing us."
Some Rohingyas have lived in Myanmar for generations, but the government refuses to acknowledge the Rohingya even exists. In this year's census, civilians were barred from registering as Rohingya. Instead, they had to register as Bengalis from neighboring Bangladesh. Steve Sanford reporting for VOA from Sitwe, Myanmar.
Pakistan Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif condemned Tuesday's murder of a Christian couple accused of desecrating the Quran and called on the Punjab provincial chief minister to show no mercy toward those responsible. Mr. Sharif, who said a responsible state cannot tolerate mob rule and public lynching with impunity, says the law should take its course to punish those who are responsible. Chief Minister Shahbaz Sharif ordered an investigation and directed police to beef up their presence in Christian neighborhoods. More than 40 people have been arrested in connection with the case, which took place about 60 kilometers southwest of Lahore. Desecration of the Muslim holy book is punishable by death or life imprisonment under Pakistan's anti-blasphemy law. According to the Human Rights Commission of Pakistan, no evidence of desecration of the Quran was found. Moeen Chima is a native Pakistani and a lecturer at Australian National University. He told VOA's Victor Beatty the blasphemy laws are deeply entrenched in the Pakistani legal system.
The blasphemy laws have been around in one form or another since the Indian Penal Code of 1860, two provisions which have become the source of a lot of controversy, particularly a provision which makes it a crime to desecrate the Holy Quran, or damage or desecrate the Holy Quran, and another provision which criminalizes blasphemy or blasphemy against personality of the Holy Prophet. It is those two provisions that have been a source of major controversy and miscarriages of justice over the last more than two decades.
Well, you have Islam prevalent in many countries around the world, but you never hear of stories like those that go on in Pakistan. Why is that?
The genesis of this dates back to the 1980s. Lots of other things have happened, particularly the war in Afghanistan and the radicalization of segments of the Pakistani population. All of these things go hand in hand. But if you look at a lot of these cases closely, usually there are other things that are happening. There's a lot of exploitation of these laws in case of property disputes or neighborhood disputes. If one party, you know, so accusations of blasphemy against a party will really make their position within the given community very untenuous. In the most recent incident, it is not the prosecution which leads to miscarriage of justice or harassment. It is an accusation which is publicly made, and a violent mob gathers around, and there's vigilantism, and lots of people are hurt or, you know, as unfortunately in the most recent incident, killed.
Chima says the most reasonable solution is leaving the blasphemy laws in place while putting in place safeguards to reduce the kinds of human rights violations that have occurred in recent years. China is denying allegations in a new report that officials traveling with President Xi Jinping last year illegally purchased thousands of kilograms of ivory in Tanzania. At a press briefing in Beijing Thursday, a foreign ministry spokesman, Hong Lei, called such charges groundless. He said his government is strongly dissatisfied by the account circulated by an environmental group. That group, the Environmental Investigation Agency, a British-based non-governmental group, aired the ivory smuggling charges Thursday. During a visit to Tanzania by President Xi in March 2013, the EIA said members of his official party illegally purchased a large quantity of elephant tusks and then smuggled them out of the East African nation aboard the presidential airliner. The EIA said Chinese diplomatic and military staff, along with Chinese businessmen, have illegally purchased large quantities of ivory on many previous occasions. I'm Jim Stevenson. I'm glad we could spend a little time sharing some of the highlights of today's Asian news. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global and is a podcast to which you may subscribe for free at voanews.com.
Now, this is the segment on VOA Global where we hear from you, and we're starting to hear from more and more of you, and we haven't even been on the air and online for a whole week already. We got a email from Goodness Chidi Nwokolo. She said, I really enjoy your program. I think this is one of the best VOA programs I have ever listened to.
Wow.
But yeah, I will also be very glad if your program focuses on issues relating to how we can control the world's astronomical human population growth and thus save the planet, our fragile ecosystem, mitigate against climate change, conserve our limited resources, improve standard of living, and thus create a sustainable future. I'll also be very glad if your program also touches on issues relating to how to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor. Thank you and have a wonderful day. You have a wonderful day as well, and we thank you for the response.
And that's what we like. We like responses that ask us to include things in our program, because we try to get you a wide variety of things. But, you know, there are stories that you're interested in, and we want to hear those. A Chinese listener named Oscar wrote to us on Weibo. The internet blocked or the great firewall is the biggest problem in accessing VOA programs. Many VOA audio materials are used by language schools for educational purposes without authorization, which drives away young listeners from the real VOA. Actually, you know, we're glad they're all out there because they're still listening to us.
Yeah, there are many attempts to block many international broadcasters around the world. We are just one of them. And we are trying to get through to you. There are many ways you can get through. You probably know about some, which we probably shouldn't talk about now, but there are others about social media. You can get in touch with us via Weibo and others around the internet.
Well, we would like to remind folks, Ira, that our email address is voaasia@voanews.com. We've got a couple features coming up.
That we do. There's a new movie out. It's called John Wick. If you're not in the United States, you probably haven't seen the commercials, which seem to air about every 34 seconds on television, as far as commercial television is concerned. But Ray Kugel is up with a review of that movie.
I'm Ray Kugel with the Hollywood Beat. What's new at the movies? Another bullet-flying, carnage-filled movie is gracing the screen with a story that's pretty familiar, but maybe with a bit of twist.
I lost everything. That dog was a final gift from my dying wife.
Jonathan, you got out once. You dip so much as a pinky back into this pond, you may find something reaching out to pull you back in.
It's personal.
An ex-hitman comes out of retirement to go after the gangsters that messed with him and killed his dog. Nope. You don't do that. And Keanu Reeves is just the guy to take care of business. In the movie called John Wick, Reeves, in the title role, is a former assassin who quit the profession to care for his sick wife. She dies, but before her exit, made sure Wick would have a dog to keep him company, a puppy named Daisy, who becomes his best friend. While driving around in his 69 Mustang, Wick gets into an altercation at a gas station with some Russian gang members who want to buy his muscle car. No way. But the tough guys won't be denied, so they break into his house at night, attack Wick, steal his car, and kill Daisy. And thus begins your revenge movie, with Reeves pulling out all the stops, with lots of shooting, kicking, and hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, John Wick is a, in the past he was an assassin, a kind of mythic assassin. He wasn't the boogeyman, but he was the guy that you would go to get the boogeyman. He's put that life away for love. And when we find him in the story, his wife is passing, and she gives him, to help him with his grief, the gift of a dog. You know, because she says that, "I know that you need someone or something to love." And then through circumstances, these people come into my home, John Wick's home, and they kill the dog, they steal the car, and they beat John Wick up. And John Wick's kind of dark side comes back as he tries to reclaim his life.
The list of baddies he faces includes some top-notch talent, including Ian McShane, Willem Dafoe, and John Leguizamo.
Where'd you get that car?
What does it matter?
It's not what you did, son. It's who you did it to.
The nobody?
But nobody.
Wick is a man of few words. When it comes to being a stoic killing machine, nobody did it better than Charles Bronson of Death Wish fame. If you don't come from the coal mines of Pennsylvania as Charlie did, you don't know how to show hate. At least, I don't think so. But Keanu Reeves turns in a performance that is not boring. Reeves just turned 50 and says that won't keep him from taking on action roles.
I love action, and I love when action is connected to character and to story. And in John Wick, I thought it was done in a really unique way, in a fresh way. The directors had a real vision for the action. They wanted to do long takes, not a lot of cutting, so that you see it happening in front of you, and you're like, wow. Did I just see that?
A movie about the underworld and blood-soaked justice being served by the good bad guys and the bad bad guys is usually a fun way to spend about 2 hours. Critics are mostly positive about John Wick, so much so they see a possible sequel in the works, if the audience turns out for this one. The Hollywood Beat goes on at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel.
No one's that good.
I thought not.
This is China Focus with me, Michael Lippin, filling in for Sarah Williams. As Asia-Pacific leaders gather in Beijing for a regional summit this week, the Chinese government has taken a series of steps to try to reduce the capital city's infamous smog. Those steps range from ordering hundreds of thousands of air-polluting factories to shut down in the surrounding area, keeping half of all private vehicles off the road every day based on their license plate numbers, and giving all public sector workers and students a holiday to encourage them to leave town. Jennifer Turner is the director of the China Environment Forum at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars here in Washington. I asked her what she thinks of Beijing's anti-pollution strategy.
These short-term strategies, I mean, it's very important for the Chinese government, you know, at such a big world event that they're hosting there. But they are ultimately, they are short-term strategies and really shouldn't really distract from the long-term changes that the Chinese government has started to take, but are going to take a long time to take effect. I mean, you've probably been monitoring that, you know, over the past year and a half, the Chinese government, you know, they've declared a war against pollution, amendments to the environmental protection law. So now you're seeing heavier fine, more aggressive naming and shaming of companies that pollute, talk that they're going to be demoting, dismiss, or even prosecute local government officials who don't really enforce the pollution control laws, which is a really big switch. In the past, local government officials would just simply be rewarded for installing pollution control equipment, and now they're actually being told they have to show results. And it's going to be really interesting to see, will there really be officials that do get demoted and dismissed because of the air quality? You know, there's a lot of changes that have to happen, you know, not just, you know, for 2 weeks.
When you look at these policies that China has been pursuing as part of longer-term anti-pollution strategies, how can we determine how effective or successful they have been?
Well, they've set these long-term policies, but a long time hasn't yet passed, right? You know, China has for many years now had what I call kind of the institutions in waiting. They've had the pollution control laws. Was it 8 years ago they passed the Open Information Act, so that information is supposed to be more transparent. Environmental impact assessments are supposed to be done. You know, there's all these mechanisms, these institutions already to really, you know, give the 1-2 punch for pollution control in China. But then you still see that the Ministry of Environmental Protection is still not sufficiently funded. It's still relatively small. So it is kind of an uphill battle. But I think that, you know, the actual results will be, to belabor the obvious, is that you're going to see cleaner, clearer skies. But even with, you know, a lot of the measures that are on the books right now and trying to push enforcement, you still have the big challenge that, you know, energy consumption, it's still large and growing.
Well, I was just going to ask you what measures you think China should take that it hasn't taken yet. How big an obstacle to progress is that huge appetite for energy that China has?
Well, and keep in mind, it's not just China's appetite. 25% of the electricity used in China is for products made for export, which is you and me, the Europeans, the Japanese, right? The rest of the world, you know, we depend on China to be our factory. And so we're part of the problem too, right? It's a global supply chain. And that, not saying that we stop consuming, but just keeping in mind that it's that when we say China's using energy, it's energy often for us. China is also, though, using lots of energy to expand their urbanization. Like they want to urbanize another 350 million people over the next 10 to 15 years. And so, you know, it's the challenges are great. When you say, like, well, what should they be doing? They are doing almost everything that they can do, except there is still that challenge, as I mentioned a moment ago, that, you know, you have when you're thinking about the pollution, that the Ministry of Environmental Protection still is not as powerful as it really needs to be. But I think we're starting to see the tides are turning. I mean, the fact that the air quality has been so bad, you know, it's the Chinese public, the Chinese news media, very vocal about their displeasure about air quality issues. And so I think that we are going to start seeing even more aggressive steps to, you know, and hopefully not just these short-term ones, to more permanently take steps that are going to limit the air pollution.
That was China environment analyst Jennifer Turner. Well, that's all for China Focus this week. Share your comments with us on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. I'm Michael Lippin.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America in Washington. It's time to check the Asia business news. Asian markets were mixed following a record close on Wall Street, while profit-taking sent Japan's Nikkei to its first loss since last week, and the U.S. dollar retreated after breaking 115 yen.
He's Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Sydney slipped 0.21%, or 11.8 points. Seoul rose, and Shanghai added a slight margin to its tally. Hong Kong closed down.
A new family of malware found in unauthorized mobile applications is threatening Apple devices in China and other emerging markets. And that's underscoring the risk of downloading apps for smartphones and tablets from third-party sources. Apple told MarketWatch Thursday that it has blocked the infected apps, which included popular games like Sims 3 and Angry Birds. However, the black market for pirated apps is extensive, and that makes it very difficult for Apple, or anyone for that matter, to keep a lid on it. So if you went out and bought or somehow downloaded your Angry Birds and you're in China or some other countries, beware.
Boeing company chief executive Jim McNerney said Wednesday the world's largest plane maker wants to launch a new single-aisle jetliner by the end of next decade, not to compete with arch-rival Airbus, but to head off emerging competition from China. State-owned Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, or COMAC, next year is expected to test its first single-aisle aircraft, the C-919, and deliver the jet in 2018.
And at another multinational company affected by China's economic slowdown, General Motors and its joint venture sold over 291,000 vehicles there in October. That is a look at the latest business from Asia.
This is Today in History. On November 7th, 1917, there was a coup against the short-lived provisional Russian government of Alexander Kerensky. Under the leadership of Vladimir Lenin, the Bolsheviks seized the government buildings in Petrograd. In 1811, General William Henry Harrison, governor of the Indiana Territory, defeated the Indian tribes of the Tecumseh Confederation at the Battle of Tippecanoe. In 1885, the last spike was driven into Canada's first transcontinental railway. In 1966, during a visit to Harvard University in Massachusetts, Secretary of Defense Robert S. McNamara was shouted down by a group of anti-war protesters. In 1967, Carl Stokes of Cleveland became the first black American to be elected mayor of a major U.S. city. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. You know, when my wife and I went on holiday on vacation to Great Britain a few months ago, and what we realized is that we tip a lot more here in the United States than people do overseas. So we left a 20% tip for a waiter or a waitress at a restaurant, and they went, oh my God, thank you so much, you know? And we realized that we tip. Well, there's a new study out that says how much to tip everyone here in the United States, all right? Store bagger. Do you ever tip somebody who bags something at a store? No, but they say $2. Dog groomers, 15 to 20%. 20%? I don't know about that. There are more. We'll have it for you later in the program.
And now, VOA's International Edition. Coming up, NATO chiefs in Afghanistan. President Obama to seek another congressional okay for those airstrikes against the Islamic State. Plus, suggestions of more economic health for the Eurozone countries. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. As NATO prepares to wind down its operations in Afghanistan at the end of the year, its Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made a surprise visit to Kabul on Thursday, where he reaffirmed the alliance's commitment to stabilizing the country.
At the end of this year, Afghan forces will assume full responsibility for the security of this country. And I'm confident that they are ready.
Afghan forces have been largely left to fight the Taliban on their own this year in their first real test since the Taliban was ousted from power in 2001 by U.S.-led forces. Once again, Jens Stoltenberg.
Next year, we will open a new chapter. The future of Afghanistan will be in Afghan hands. But our support will continue.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani is optimistic about it all.
Our desire is for peace and for sustainable peace so that peace will be enduring.
Contingent of about 10,000 foreign troops, most of them American, will be staying in Afghanistan after the end of the year. They'll be there to train and support the Afghan forces. Pakistan has rejected as utterly baseless U.S. allegations that it still has sanctuaries for militants that are detrimental to Afghan and regional stability. Ayaz Ghul reports.
In its biannual war assessment mandated by the U.S. Congress, the Department of Defense said that Taliban attacks in Afghanistan, launched from sanctuaries primarily in the tribal areas of neighboring Pakistan, remain a serious problem. The report goes on to assert that Afghan and Indian-focused militants continue to operate from Pakistani soil to undermine Afghan and regional stability. It also alleges that Islamabad uses these proxy forces to hedge against the loss of influence in Afghanistan and to counter India's superior military. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Tasneem Aslam rejected the allegations as utterly baseless and unsubstantiated. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
President Obama will meet later today with congressional leaders here in Washington about their legislative plans and says one measure for which he wants is specific authorization is the airstrikes of U.S.-led coalition, the ones they're conducting against the Islamic State militants in Iraq and Syria. When Mr. Obama first announced the air campaign against the insurgents back in September, he used the congressional permission cited by then-President George W. Bush more than a decade ago to retaliate against al-Qaeda after its 2001 terrorist attacks on the U.S. that killed nearly 3,000 people. But Mr. Obama said at his news conference this week, it is time now to resize and right-size and update his war authorization to suit the current fight rather than previous fights. He said the U.S. military force needs both White House and congressional support.
The world needs to know we are united behind this effort, and the men and women of our military deserve our clear and unified support.
And on the war front, Syrian Observatory of Human Rights, which is based in Britain, said airstrikes by the U.S.-led coalition shifted off the Islamic State instead of targeting two other hardline militant groups, including the Nusra Front. International Criminal Court announced on Thursday it will not prosecute Israel for a 2010 raid on a Turkish flotilla bound for Gaza. Nine pro-Palestinian activists trying to break an Israeli blockade were killed in that raid. Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said there is a reasonable basis to believe war crimes were committed.
However, after carefully assessing all relevant considerations, I concluded that the potential case or cases likely arising from an investigation into this incident would not be of sufficient gravity to justify further action by the court.
Israeli Foreign Ministry said Israel considered the case politically motivated and legally unfounded. Israel is tightening security in Jerusalem and the West Bank following a series of incidents in which Palestinians rammed cars into Israelis. The attacks have unnerved Israeli citizens and posed a challenge for security forces. Meantime, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Thursday vowed that there would be no change in the status quo at the Temple Mount, which includes a Muslim religious site.
I spoke today to King Abdullah of Jordan, and we agreed that we'll do every effort to make every effort to calm the situation. I explained to him that we're keeping the status quo on the Temple Mount.
Area has seen sectarian violence in recent weeks. Thousands of workers took to the streets of Brussels Thursday. They're protesting the Belgian government's free market reforms and austerity measures. At least 14 people were injured when protesters clashed with the police. Protesters pelted police with stones and fireworks, overturning cars, setting many of them on fire. Police used tear gas and water cannon to disperse the demonstrators. Workers were protesting plans by the country's new center-right government to increase the pension age from 65 to 67, freeze wages, and cut public services. European stock markets surged on Thursday after the European Central Bank indicated it's considering further action to boost the sluggish economy in the euro currency zone. Lisa Bride is in Paris with our report.
As expected, the European Central Bank left its main interest rate unchanged. It's already at a record low of only 0.05%. At a news conference Thursday afternoon, ECB chief Mario Draghi said the central bank wanted to first see the effects of measures already put into place to counter the risk of deflation and boost European economies. But Mr. Draghi also said the ECB was preparing for more action if needed.
Should it become necessary to further address risks of too prolonged a period of low inflation, the Governing Council is unanimous in its commitment to using additional unconventional instruments within its mandate.
The outlook is already pretty grim for the 18 nations using the euro currency. Governments have been slashing spending and raising taxes to overcome a years-long debt crisis. Overall, eurozone unemployment is an alarming 11.5%, and both businesses and consumers have been tightening their belts, sparking fears the eurozone will fall into a downward price spiral known as deflation. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And here we go, folks. Lollapalooza, the U.S.-based festival that grew out of the alternative rock scene, on Thursday announced its expansion in Europe, and first edition next year will be in Berlin. Move comes amid the rapid growth of world music festivals. Lollapalooza also available in Argentina, Brazil, and Chile. That's a look at some of the stories making news this hour.
This is Business News on VOA Global. Along with Ira Melman, I'm Jim Stevenson. The U.S. stock market edged further into record territory as traders were encouraged by the latest corporate earnings. The Standard & Poor's 500 index rose 7 points, or just over 0.4% on Thursday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rising 69 points to 17,554, and the NASDAQ Composite gaining 17 points. It closed at 4,638.
European stocks rose and the euro fell after the president of the European Central Bank said the bank is preparing the groundwork for further stimulus measures. The price of oil fell 77 cents. It's all the way down to $77.91 a barrel in New York.
Americans seem to be ready to move past the recent Ebola scare to travel by air in greater numbers for the Thanksgiving holiday. During the 12-day period around the November 27th holiday, 24.6 million people will be flying on the nation's airlines. That's a 1.5% increase over the same period last year, according to a forecast by a trade group for Airlines for America.
And I think all of the 25 million will be on the one plane that I'm flying on. U.S. cattle prices are surging again. That's a fresh blow to consumers already stung by record costs for steaks and ground beef. Live cattle futures leapt to an all-time high of $1.70 a pound last week. wish that's what we paid for it, reflecting concerns that domestic cattle supplies are even tighter than many analysts had expected.
Well, it's time to get ready for the holidays again, and guess what? Starbucks has announced it will be bringing back the eggnog latte after customer complaints that the holiday favorite did not appear alongside the coffee chain's red holiday cups on November the 1st. Starbucks had dropped the seasonal drink made with spiced eggnog, espresso, and nutmeg in an effort to streamline its menu, but it's been a seasonal offering since 1986.
And, you know, I never liked those drinks at Starbucks. So therefore, I used my power and my influence, of course, to go and tell them not to do it. So it is my fault.
I'm impressed, Ira.
Yeah, I thought so. But Starbucks keeps doing this. I know they want to react to, they don't need to make any money. They charge, what, $38 for a cup of coffee?
You know what? I'm ready for the American Cafe now.
Let's do it. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. 13 years after the Twin Towers were destroyed in a terrorist attack on September 11, 2001 in New York, America's tallest skyscraper, One World Trade Center, opened Monday. More on the story now from VOA's Bernard Chessman. He's in New York.
With One World Trade Center almost complete, the building's first tenant, Condé Nast Publishing, moved in even as the final phases of construction continue. Condé Nast eventually will have 2,300 employees spread among 24 floors. Those arriving to work Monday were generally enthusiastic and expressed no concerns about being safe.
There's plenty of security here. You feel safe. At least I do.
You know, and I think it was a tragedy that happened in 2011, but I think it's a great tribute to America, what they've come back and done. So, I'm proud to be able to work here.
Comedian Chris Rock this past weekend on NBC's Saturday Night Live had a different take.
They should change the name from the Freedom Tower to the Never Going In There Tower. Because I'm never going in there. No circumstance that will ever get me in that building.
Condé Nast Vijay Ramacharitar disagreed.
I don't think you look at this building with fear. You look at it with inspiration and, perseverance.
Condé Nast, Port Authority, and construction company officials were also on hand for the occasion.
This is a terrific day for Lower Manhattan, a wonderful day for New York City, and an absolutely great day for Condé Nast.
This is the safest Class A office space any place, not in the nation, any place in the world.
We give this back to New York as a gift of remembrance of people we lost that fateful day, but also of the wonder of how people pull together to make such a wonderful thing, wonderful structure in their memory.
The building is 541 meters high with 279,000 square meters of space. It is already 60% leased by a variety of publishing, technology, and communications companies. Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
Atheists, by definition, don't believe in God, so they should have no need of a church. However, a couple of years ago, a pair of British stand-up comedians decided to create one. Sanderson Jones and Pippa Evans told the BBC that they envisioned something like a church, but without God. Their Sunday Assembly movement has grown from a single congregation in London to dozens of churches around the world. Reporter Mike Osborne visited with members of a Sunday Assembly that now meet regularly in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sunday morning, time for the monthly atheist assembly in a downtown Nashville park.
Stand up with me, guys!
The gathering really does look and feel very much like church. There are songs, all Beatles tunes, on this day.
The comfort and care on which we depend is given.
Special readings, a message, even an offering at the end of the service. Original Nashville Assembly member Landry Butler says church provides a great model for building a sense of community.
That has a powerful way of bringing people together for the common good and of focusing that energy. And so we wanted to use that as a model because it's something that people are familiar with.
Church is especially familiar in this region. Religious participation rates in Tennessee are some of the highest in the nation. So Butler says he's always surprised at how many believers show up for the assembly.
They go back to their regular church the other Sundays of the month, and then they come and hang with us when they can. And that's been a good way of sort of bridging those two communities.
The Sunday Assembly movement has experienced phenomenal growth. At the end of September, more than 30 new assemblies met on a single Sunday. For VOA News, I'm Mike Osborne in Nashville, Tennessee.
American Cafe is available at voanews.com as part of VOA Global and as a podcast on numerous platforms. Join us. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Have you ever heard the old proverb, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, of course, is the answer. Sometimes it seems like making any kind of life change, whether it's losing weight, quitting smoking, organizing your office, or learning a new language, is so overwhelming that many of us just quit before we reach our goal. But Dr. Robert Maurer, who is on the faculty at both UCLA and the University of Washington Medical Schools, says that he found a philosophy in the Lexus car construction company that led him to a revelation of how to achieve big goals.
The thought entered my mind, well, maybe there's something about building a car that we could apply metaphorically to building and running your life. And so I started investigating the history of Toyota and specifically the Lexus, and found that they had embraced a concept that an American had introduced them to about making very, very small steps when you want to improve the quality of a product or process. And Toyota had embraced this and given it its own name, and as well as other Japanese companies. And so the name Kaizen comes from the Japanese. But the idea being that you're making very, very small steps when you want to accomplish large goals, as opposed to innovation, taking the largest possible steps to accomplish a large goal.
Dr. Maurer says that adults often have an accusing voice in their head that's put there through toxic thought patterns. He said that grown-ups can learn how to change their lives in a big way by looking at the way that children learn a skill.
There's this enduring myth that change is hard and change is scary, and of course it is in the way we go about it, because for most of us as adults, we tend to make change either in the face of some crisis, something's not going right in our lives, and we're angry at ourselves that this happened, and we want the problem to go away yesterday, so we think the bigger the step, the bigger the challenge, the bigger the result, and so we tend to make these large steps that occasionally work, but often create more problems than they've solved. If you think about children, they don't seem to have much fear or difficulty with learning, because everything we teach them is in small increments. And so what we found is if you can make the steps very small, the place in the brain where fear lives stays quiet. And you're beginning to develop habits through the incremental and continual process of making steps towards your goal. Because the brain's really a creature of habit. And anything you do regularly, David, the brain builds in. So you're better off doing something 1 minute a day every day than you are doing something an hour once a week.
The Kaizen philosophy applies even to serious things like addiction, where there can be a neurochemical hurdle that people have to overcome. Dr. Robert Maurer told me that even one of the most difficult habits to break, cigarette smoking, can be conquered by taking quitting one small step at a time.
Many of the people that have trouble quitting smoking have already demonstrated huge amounts of discipline and success in their work life and their relationships. Highly successful people, this is kind of like the last thing they're having trouble dealing with. And often they're having trouble because these are people who are fiercely independent and self-reliant. These people have trouble asking for help, have trouble kind of letting people in and letting them see who they are. They will tell you, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, David, cigarettes are my best friend. They smoke when they're upset. They smoke when they're happy. This is the place they go for comfort. And so we try to teach them how to begin to think about going to another person, a friend, a lover, with their sadness, with their joy, so that they start to put a person between themselves and the cigarettes then lose the attraction that they have.
Dr. Robert Maurer's book, One Small Step Can Change Your Life, The Kaizen Way, is available on Amazon.com and at other retailers. So, what do you think? Have you ever tried to change your life by using small steps? Or have you stumbled over the big steps only to become frustrated? Let us know your story by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And, of course, you can always email us your questions or comments by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com. That's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Sports is coming up, and our lead story deals with the bureaucracy, if I could say that, of the Olympic Committee International. And we've both done covered Olympics, and it's quite amazing how bureaucracy can kind of mess things up. And it usually does, does a lot as far as the Olympic Committee is concerned. Stay with us.
It's sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. Asia's top Olympic official has ruled out the possibility of the 2022 Winter Olympics being shifted from its traditional February time slot to avoid clashing with the World Cup, saying FIFA needs to sort out its own problems. Soccer's world governing body is currently considering whether to move the 2022 World Cup, scheduled to be played in Qatar in June and July, to a cooler time of the year to avoid those hottest months in the Middle East.
They don't get along. Graham McDowell opened with 7 birdies and 12 holes and hung on for a 567 Thursday for a 2-shot lead in the HSBC Champions Tournament in Shanghai. Sechan International is playing as tough as it ever has with thick rough and narrow fairways. That didn't seem to bother McDowell. He kept hitting it right down the middle and converting putts to open strong in the final World Golf Championship of the year. Ricky Fowler also got off to a fast start before he settled down. Fowler had a 69, along with Brad Snedeker, Chris Kirk, Tim Clark, and Tommy Fleetwood.
You know, that's the old PGA saying that these guys are good. Wow, they sure are.
Yep.
The National Football League will be staging 3 more regular season games at Wembley Stadium in London again next season. The schedule also includes games played on consecutive Sundays in London for the very first time. The Miami Dolphins will return for a third time to face the New York Jets on October 4th in an AFC East matchup. The Jacksonville Jaguars will be playing the Buffalo Bills, and then the Detroit Lions will be back for their second year in a row to face the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, you realize there that some of those teams, anyway, playing in London are teams that aren't drawing so well at home. You notice that.
Yes.
Olympic and world champion figure skater Yuzuru Hanyu of Japan will make his long-awaited return to the ice in his season debut at the Cup of China starting Friday. Hanyu had been expected to take part in the Finlandia Trophy last month in Espoo, Finland, but decided to skip it as a precaution after injuring his back.
And a Japanese swimmer suspended for stealing a camera at the Asian Games has denied the allegations. He claims someone placed that camera in his gym bag. You would think he might get enough endorsements to get one of his own.
That's a look at sports, and this is VOA Global. Music coming up next.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on the Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're cranking up the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending November 8th, 2014. Ring the bells and break out the confetti, because our countdown is again co-ed. That's right, after 7 long weeks, the men return to the Top 5 lineup. It all happens in 5th place, where Maroon 5 jumps 2 slots with Animals. The video for this song has caused plenty of controversy. Hold on for details. Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell yourself for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Baby, I'm... Maroon 5 posts its 7th career top 5 hit as Animals, jumped two slots to fifth place. The bloody video features lead singer Adam Levine stalking his real-life wife, model Behati Prinsloo. Anti-violence groups are outraged at what they see as a romanticized portrayal of stalking. About a month before the song was released, Levine told radio host Ryan Seacrest that animals is going to be something to talk about, so they obviously knew it would cause a stir. Slipping a slot to fourth place is Bang Bang from Jessie J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj. Jessie says she's ready to attack the stateside market. Hang on for more. J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj dip a notch to number four with Bang Bang. Last week, Jessie's third album, Sweet Talker, opened in 10th place on the United States chart. It's only Jessie's second U.S. release. Her sophomore album, Alive, wasn't deemed right for the stateside market. Jessie J says she knows who she is as an artist now, and she'll hit the states for several shows in November and December. Up two slots to third place goes Tove Lo and Habits Stay High. This success has been a long time coming. Details are on the way.
You're gone and I gotta stay high all the time to keep you off my mind. Ooh, ooh, high all the time to keep you off my mind. Ooh.
Tove Lo kicks it up to third place with Habits Stay High. This song has kicked around since March 2013 when it appeared on Tove's debut EP, Truth Serum. It only made the bestseller lists after its re-release late last year, and now it's blowing up. In fact, it just hit number one on the Billboard Pop Songs Airplay chart. Holding in second place is Taylor Swift, who just shocked the music industry. I'll fill you in after Shake It Off. Taylor Swift holds in second place yet another week with her former champ Shake It Off. This week, she pulled her entire catalog from the popular streaming service Spotify. Taylor has been outspoken about musicians valuing their work and not settling for low-royalty outlets such as streaming sites. Extending her championship reign to 8 weeks is Meghan Trainor, who's set to take her act on the road. Dates are coming up after All About That Bass.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
Meghan Trainor holds the Hot 100 Championship for an eighth big week with All About That Bass. The 20-year-old singer will perform at the famous Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on November 27th. And next February, she'll kick off her first headlining tour in Vancouver, Canada. That's it for today, but what about next week? Well, join me in 7 days for an all-new lineup. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
This is VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. A while back, we were talking about tipping and what are the protocols for tipping, at least here in the United States.
I just can't get that song about the bass out of my head. And I really wish I could.
Well, you're not about the treble, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. We are expected to tip in the United States a lot more than people around other parts of the world. And we listed some as to a coach bus driver, a $1 to $2 a bag if they handle bag. Okay, I understand this. A building superintendent, $20 to $100. I lived in New York City. If you don't tip the building superintendent
in
New York City.
Your water doesn't get fixed.
Nothing gets fixed unless you tip it. However, there are others here, Jim.
Yes, there are. I mean, you could go to a waxing salon. I don't personally. I don't think you do either, Ira, judging by your
never mind. My what, Jim?
Your hair.
whatever's left of it on top.
15%, they say. You should be tipping at a waxing salon. A doorman gets a $100 gift certificate. I don't know, Ira, if you give him the $100 gift certificate, will he stay at the door?
I sure hope so. But when I open the door for you to get out of the studio, I expect some money tonight.
Oh, yeah, right. Good luck on that.
Yeah, okay. Here's the one I love the best. The cable guy, who we all love.
Yes.
All right. Do you tip the cable guy, which I have done after he's done some extra stuff, if you expect him to do some, or her, do some extra stuff. But if they, number one, come late, if they, number two, don't show up, if they, number three, don't do the job, it says here to give them refreshments.
That's probably why your cable service is so bad and your bill's high. Well, that's all the time we have here on VOA Global. We hope you join us again next week right here on The Voice of America, where you can hear many of your favorite features that we play for you. We'll see you next